Do you judge, my friend, because you know the difference between right from wrong, or do you judge so that you hope people will think you know the difference between right and wrong? Do you judge to exalt the law or to exalt yourself? And do I? Well, let's look at that a little bit more. We're in Romans chapter 2, and this is Colin Cook here and how it happens. This broadcast that shows us the nature of humanity and also the nature of God's love, so that we can see through the grace that God has given to us in Jesus Christ how we stand in another identity than our own. Because our identity is shot, my friend. Our identity is broken down, and only peace through Christ can give us that sense of well-being and a future that we can look forward to in eternity. All right, we're looking at Romans chapter 2, and by the way, we had a good seminar. It was so nice to see some new people and some of the old faces. Now, don't think I'm calling you old, my folk, even though you're getting that way, but it was so good. And by the way, it was good to see my son, my spiritual son, Purna, from India. He's been here a month now, you know. You've heard me talk about him before. This ministry has supported him through a long time, and he's now in the United States, and he came to the seminar and was so warmly received. And by the way, I think I told everybody that he had his first American donut too. Boy, now the slippery slope down to comestible oblivion for Purna, yes? Unless, of course, some supreme forces cause him to resist American corpulence. Anyway, I put it in all that language so you wouldn't know what I meant. But some of you do, I know. Anyway, here we are in Romans chapter 2. Now look, my friend, I've asked you the other day, I asked myself a lot, why does Paul spend a whole chapter on judging one another? It's a much bigger picture than we think. He's not simply talking about personal individual judgment here. What Paul is doing, remember, is showing the condition of the world. He is showing, in chapter 1, paganism expressed as religion. And in chapter 2, religion expressed as paganism. Remember that Paul is showing that even religions, all religions of the world, are a flight from humanity. How do I know that I'm sure on that? Because Paul says all mankind is suppressing the truth about God, even in the acts of worship, which he describes very clearly in chapter 1. Well, then he surprises the lot of us, these religious ones of us, all of us, in other words, who go to church or synagogue or mosque or whatever we do and bow and worship, that even our worship is a judgment. Now, this is quite startling. And so Paul is using a broad stroke, not because he's generalizing, but because he is specifically stating that all human beings are broken down. He says, in effect, that we who are religious and uphold the law are inexcusable because we do the same things. Now, at first, that would seem utterly unreasonable. Paul, we don't bow down to wooden idols and metal idols. We don't have these idols in our house. But the point is, he's looking at the inner workings of judgment and paganism and seeing the same thing, which is that when a man judges, he exalts himself and seems to imply, more than seems to imply, he does imply that he is above the law and he is not under its judgment, but the others that he is judging are. Now, I said the other day, and this is also very, very important, that Paul is saying there is no privileged class. In fact, he says in 2 verse 11, there is no partiality with God. But you see, the Jew believed that there was a privileged class. They had been given the law. They had been given the testimonies and all these good things. They were of the circumcision. They had the oracles of God. So they thought they were privileged, they were saved by virtue of their position, by virtue of being given all of this. They thought that they were exempt from the judgments of the law. But Paul is playing kind of devil's advocate in chapter 2 of Romans and saying, look, if you teach the law, if you do all these things, then you must comply also. You must also come under its judgment if you do not comply. He says, in effect, that the law will render to each man according to his deeds eternal life to those who by patient continuance in doing good seek for glory and honor and immortality. That's verses 6 and 7. And to those who are self-seeking and do not obey the truth but only obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath. That's verse 8. And tribulation and anguish on every soul who does evil, of the Jew first and also of the Greek. But glory and honor and peace to everyone who works what is good, to the Jew first and also to the Greek, for there is no partiality. He's saying, if I place the standard of the law in front of me and the whole world, I can only come under its judgment. So verse 12, he says, for as many as have sinned without the law will also perish without the law. How is that? Because they have the law in their hearts, you see. They don't have it on tables of stone, but it's in their hearts. And as many as have sinned in the law will be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just in the sight of God, but the doers of the law. And Paul's point is that there are no doers of the law. For when Gentiles, who do not have the law by nature, do the very things that in the law, that is, on the outward surface at least, these, although not having the law, are law to themselves. So he says that the pagans have the law in their hearts, the Jews have the law in their hearts, and all are condemned by it. Now, you see, be very careful about this, my friend. I've heard Christians dismiss the law so easily. They say, oh, well, you know, nobody keeps the law, so anybody who's trying to keep that law is just foolish and blind. Paul does not act like that. Paul says the law is holy and righteous and good. He also says in chapter 7 of Romans that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal. Now, please take note of that. Because I hear many Christians say today, the law is carnal, and I am spiritual. I don't follow the law because I'm spiritual now. But the law is carnal. It deals with just outward things. No, it doesn't. The message of the gospel is that I need Jesus Christ and his salvation and his atoning sacrifice, because without it, the law is so spiritual and is judging my imperfection. Because I am so carnal, and therefore I need Jesus. We respect the law. We seek to walk in harmony with Jesus, and therefore by faith in him we fulfill the law. But not by the law do we fulfill the law, only by his righteousness being counted as ours. Now, it's a struggle to get through all of this wording. It's a struggle to get through all of these perceptions, so keep hanging on with me night by night, and we'll get through it, and you'll come to an understanding. But I do urge you to watch out for judgment. Because when you know that you are imposing a judgment of disgust and contempt upon others, you clearly have not, at that point, embraced Jesus. Maybe you've embraced him at other times. Maybe you will embrace him 5 minutes later. But let that tendency to judgment pull you up sharp and let it say, wait a minute, what am I doing here? You know it's very clear, don't you, that men and women in the throes of addiction are very judgmental. They feel so guilty, so ashamed, so afraid, that they then project and spit that judgment upon other people. They condemn them. They feel victims. They feel that all the world is against them. They feel everyone else is to blame for their situation. Now, you know that we've got to find our freedom from that for any growing experience. How do we find our freedom? We accept that we too come under the judgment of the law. We too are sinners, that there is no difference between the man out there and us, even though he does a different kind of sinning from us. And when we then accept that, then we come to Christ. Then we say, Jesus, you are my righteousness. You are my wholeness. I can't find any in myself. I am broken down. And thus, when you receive that by faith, then you begin the life of sweetness, a little more kindness, a little more generosity of heart, a little less bitterness, a little less narrow-mindedness, a little more openness to listening to others' stories. It's an amazing thing that happens. Now, my friend, you know I'm not talking about evaluation. We all need to be able to evaluate right from wrong and good from evil and what is wise and what is unwise. We all need to take steps like that. But don't let yourself come under under judgment, because then you will bring others under judgment. And when you do that, you know that you have stopped living in the mercy of God, and your heart is becoming narrow and bitter. And then there is no joy, and then the song of the soul fades away, and there is only a grinding and a strange kind of tone of darkness in our souls. So, my friend, this is what Paul is getting to. And above all, he's opening the door, and I might add, this is very, very important, above all, he's opening the door to the Gentiles, which means to the other nations. He's saying to us that what stops us from believing that another man beyond our shores can be saved is this sense of judgment that gives us some kind of privilege, some kind of ownership of the law and of the gospel and of the church. Don't let Jesus be yours only. He is the Savior of the world. Don't talk about him as if you own him. He owns you, and he owns all the world in his death and his resurrection. Now, friends, as you know, we're in a new year. I haven't been able to talk about the need for your partnership with this ministry because I've been announcing the seminar each evening during the month of January. Well, now that's over. I am here to ask you to help. Would you consider putting FaithQuest into your budget this year, 2011? You know, while I was recording this broadcast, somebody called me and said he had been, and he'll hear this and I will say hello to you, he has been listening to this broadcast since 1998, and he hadn't donated, and he called KLT and said how much he appreciated the program. KLT said he needed support, and so this man called me, and he's making a monthly donation. He's becoming a new partner. How about you? If you've been listening for a few weeks, a few months, or some years, please become a supporter. I do not get paid by KLT. I pay them for radio space. You understand how it works. How do I do that? Not because I'm a rich man, but because you, my listeners, become supporters. You appreciate the message. You like being fed by the word. You are trained in your faith, and you say, I've got to support this. So, if you'd like to do that, please send your first check to FaithQuest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado, 80160. FaithQuest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado, 80160. I'll send you my Cook's Monthly Message, my friend, as an appreciation. Did you get that address? FaithQuest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado, 80160. I'll see you next time, my friend. Cheerio, and God bless.